Well, thank you once again. Welcome to Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray.
For those of you who perhaps have never listened to the shows which run every third Friday of the month from 7 till 8pm, we are both licensed medical herbalists who trained in England and graduated there with a degree in herbal medicine. And we run a clinic in Garberville where we consult with clients about a wide range of conditions and recommend herb supplements and nutritional counselling. So you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM, and from 7:30 until the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with any questions, either related or unrelated, to this month's continuing subject of nitric oxide, nitrates, nitrites, fluoride, other components that are in the food chain, and decreasing fertility. So quite a few controversial subjects. And I guess before I get into the topic here with the first kickoff, which is fluoride and what's been revealed about fluoride, I'd like to very much welcome Dr. Pete for giving his time so freely to join us on these shows. Dr. Pete, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us. Just want to, as always, give you the opportunity to outline your academic and professional background. So for those people who perhaps have never listened to you, when they hear you talk, I think it's unequivocal that you sound very well informed, and a population should always be as informed as possible in order to make wise decisions. So if you would first just start up by letting people know your academic and professional background, then we'll get into tonight's topic.
Okay. 1968 to 72, I studied biology, physiology, and biochemistry, especially at the University of Oregon for a PhD. Before that, I was in linguistics, literature, painting, and such. And since then, I've been writing newsletters and doing consulting.
Okay. Your background, I think, is very much focused on the energetic state of the organism. I mean, you know, you refer to humans and us as organisms, which we are, just like, I'm not saying we're like yeasts and molds and slimes, but we're all living organisms. And in terms of the energy production of an organism and its ability to thrive and survive, that's a very important component. And I know that your a lot of your research work with hormones related to fertility, not just fertility, but productivity and energy metabolism and mitochondrial energy production, have been key in understanding the mechanism by which disease happens. And you have some very groundbreaking thoughts, and those thoughts towards disease processes that most other people haven't really made the link. So I really appreciate your genuine passion for your subject.
I had been intending to study brain biology when I went to the university, and the dogmatism in the nerve biology department made me look elsewhere, and I found that reproductive physiology was an open, more scientific area. And so after I finished my thesis on the aging of the reproductive system, I then went back and applied that information to how the brain works, and spent a year or two writing my book, Mind and Tissue.
Okay. Did you find the subject of reproductive physiology as dogmatic as the other branches of science, or?
No, not at all.
Yeah, good.
My thesis advisor, Arnold Soderwall, had been one of the pioneers in exploring the effects of vitamin E as a fertility nutrient.
Hmm.
In the 1940s, 30s and 40s, actually, it was vitamin E was recognized as a protection against polyunsaturated fats and against estrogen.
Okay.
Both of those were things that interfered with oxidative energy production. And so vitamin E was preserving the ability of tissues to oxidize properly. And it has come to be known as an antioxidant, but really it should be thought of as a normalizer of good oxidative metabolism.
Well, that brings me to another point. In terms of being informed, most people think that when you hear the word estrogen, and I think this includes me up until about 8 years ago, having been dogmatically brainwashed, if you like, by the industry providing the education in herbal medicine, very allied to regular Western medicine in terms of the physiology, the biochemistry, the pathology and the differential diagnosis, etc. It's very science-based, regular mainstream medical education. And it wasn't until I'd left, maybe 10 years later, after having read different reports and looking very alternatively, as is my profession, to look at a holistic way of trying to approach disease, that I've discovered the lies, basically, that were fed through the system from the top down, from the professors to the students. And it's I think without exception, wherever there's prestige, there's a big degree of brainwashing, going along with the, whether it's the money from the industry that's paying off people to keep things quiet or to produce bogus scientific research to support something so potentially dangerous products can make it to the market, whether it's paying off the FDA to allow things to be cleared. I think all the way through government, wherever there's money, especially big amounts of money, there's a huge amount of corruption that can come through it, and most people are not immune to it. So I wanted to give a couple of statements, a couple of statements that have been mentioned here, just to help people understand this part of the show is much more about, well, what we think we know, we really don't know. And everybody has access to the internet now, pretty much, probably more so than ever before. And cell phones, etc., that are on the internet make it all possible if you don't have a desktop or a laptop computer even. But the internet is a huge resource for people to stand up and say what it is that you're probably not going to hear on Fox, CNN, you know, or regular mainstream media. I think, and it's a good thing, I think regular mainstream media is dying a very, very slow death here. And the internet, whilst you do find a lot of cranky things on the internet, I think there's an amazing platform for people to spread research and truth, and for everybody to find it. So I think there's always a self-evident truth that most people, when they hear it, it just rings true, rather than someone trying to sell you something or to spin an idea for their own gain or their own profit. The two quotes then, are people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives, number one. And then Thomas Jefferson's famous quote, a nation of sheep will be ruled by wolves. Just to say that we have some very important constitutional rights in this country that were laid down 1776. Everyone's heard about it. I was born in Britain. You know, I'm a US citizen now and proud to be in the US and quite happy to be away from England and its tyrannical control. And this country has a big history of having a lot of freedom. So that's something that we really need to preserve. Okay, so let's get into the next question of things that we think are good for us that the government, you know, our elected officials who should be doing what we tell them to do, not what goes on now. Things that get passed in government that get bought out, lobbyists controlling people in the Senate, etc., and allowing industry to do what they do. But the internet reveals a lot of the truth about what's being done and the science behind the truth. So people that have any education at all, or even uneducated people, can see that it's not made up. And one of those things, I guess the start of it all, I really wanted just to get into fluoride. It was not actually the main topic of tonight's discussion with you, Dr. Pete, because I know you have plenty of research that you're doing and a newsletter that you're writing here on nitric oxide. And nitric oxide being one of those things that I think most people will just believe is good for you. And I picked up on what you said originally about estrogen. And doing what you were doing with estrogen, showing how damaging it is. And most people, especially women, they just think estrogen is just completely normal and it's something that they have, and it's not harmful, it's not inflammatory, it's not carcinogenic. And a lot of this comes through the medical education and the doctors and what they'll tell you, what they've been told by the people that are doing the bogus science and or the, you know, the profiteering, I'd call it, for big industry. So a lot of what we hear, you cannot just believe it. And I would encourage anybody and everybody just to research what I'm saying. I mean, I might just be telling you a complete lie, but I'm not. You can find this out for yourself. So getting on to fluoride then, that I just wanted to say that I have a little paragraph here I just had prepared for the subject just to show you how evil it all is, really, because it's kind of unbelievable. I think the biggest deception is the largest lie you can produce. It's probably the most easy to hide in plain sight because it's just so stupendously unbelievable that most people just don't even see it. It's hidden in plain sight. So that the fluoride that they put in our drinking water is not even a pharmaceutical pharmaceutical grade additive. That's the first thing that you should know. It's an industrial waste byproduct. And making money from waste products, selling them as additives or food, is big business. And with increasing aluminum production in the beginning of the 20th century, it became necessary to find somewhere to put the fluoride, which was a waste byproduct of the industry. And manufacturers at this point could no longer get away with just dumping it into rivers or landfills because it was poisoning crops and making livestock sick. Now, Francis Frary, chief scientist for Alcoa, had an idea. He commissioned Gerald Cox at the Mellon Institute. Have you ever heard of him? Well, to conduct research regarding the benefits of adding fluoride to the water supply. Now, the Mellon Institute was frequently hired by big business to produce research that supported their industries. And for several decades, they produced research showing that asbestos was safe and didn't cause cancer. Another proponent of the safety of fluoride at the time was scientist Harold Hodge, who was later exposed as part of the human radiation experiment, where test subjects were injected with plutonium and uranium in 1945 through 46. And this was documented by the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Eileen Wilson in The Plutonium Files. And you can buy this on Amazon. You can watch it on YouTube. So The Plutonium Files just basically outlines everything that was done in these hideous experiments on the human radiation project. Overseen by Harold Hodge. Now, Hodge was also the chief toxicologist of the Manhattan Project, and fluoride was a key component in the production of the atom bomb, and his studies were conducted with a bias toward proving fluoride safe, which would protect the government and industry from lawsuits. Now, the phony research science done to support water fluoridation was underwritten by these massive companies. The Aluminum Company of America, Alcoa, the Aluminum Company of Canada, the American Petroleum Institute, DuPont, Kaiser Aluminum, Reynolds Steel, U.S. Steel, and the National Institute of Dental Research. Surprise, surprise. Now, PR master Edward Bernays, also known as the father of spin, created the PR campaign to sell fluoride to the nation as an additive recommended by a doctor and dentist for healthy teeth. And he was a pioneer of modern propaganda and used the theories of mass psychology and persuasion to suit the needs of corporate and political organizations. And the main fluoride chemical added to water today is hydrofluorosilic acid. It's an industrial byproduct from the phosphate fertilizer industry now. And fluoride given to rats has been proven to cause bone cancer, liver cancer, and a host of other physical ailments. So, Dr. P, I know I hadn't particularly asked you about fluoride. I know we'll talk into some of the other subjects here that I think we are prepared for. But fluoride, what's your take on fluoride?
I mean, is there any logic to anything they're saying about fluoride in teeth?
I read a few studies in the 1970s in which they had compared villages that had high fluoride or zero fluoride added to the water, and it happened that teeth were healthier in the village without the fluoride. And some of the early studies were done in Montana towns where the water was naturally mineralized, and they were getting trace minerals natural in the mountain water. And they didn't control for that. They blamed the fluoride content on for the good dental health. But it was probably the magnesium, molybdenum, other trace minerals in the water that helped the teeth mature properly. And that, because I was interested, I went to hear John Yamayana's talk, and he was very impressive. He was supposedly debating with a dentist who claimed to be an expert on fluoridation, and he finally got the dentist to admit that his preparation consisted of reading a review article, and Yamayana's had worked for the abstracting service, I think it was Biological Abstracts, and was familiar with 15,000 studies on fluoride. And so he could make any opponent look ridiculous, and so they avoided debating him. They just said he was a quack, and so shouldn't be even given serious hearing. Yamayana's and Dean Burke did a study in Los Angeles and found that the fluoridation before and after fluoride was added, the cancer incidence increased.
Right.
And Dean Burke really was one of the best cancer researchers in the world. He was a colleague of Otto Warburg.
Mm-hmm.
So Dean Burke's reputation was damaged by getting involved with fluoride.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate in the geopolitical landscape that people that align themselves with the truth are often attacked and discredited, and people that have genuine humanitarian ethics when they go into science and research find things that disturb them, and quite rightly they want to blow the whistle on it, and then obviously they suffer the you know, the tirade of abuse or discrediting that goes on to make them seem like idiots or quacks, as you mentioned. And like I said, it's so difficult, folks. Sometimes the truth is in plain sight, but it's the most difficult to see. It's like the phrase, can't see the wood for the trees. But anyway, like I said, the internet is a great resource to find out lots of stuff that you're not going to find on mainstream news. And thank goodness mainstream media is slowly dying a death. Well, Dr. Peter, I wanted to ask you about something that I know you're fairly recently involved with in terms of the... And I'm not just talking about the additives to food, but it is an additive. And I think this is important that people recognize and wake up to what is allowed. If we talk about a government that allows certain things, then obviously the corruption issue comes in, where the money is a big part of making the decision to allow it, and phony science that seems to support its use or its safety being allowed, when that actually isn't the truth, and there is no real scientific proof that it can stand and actually be a safe product. Let's just talk about nitrates and nitrites. Go ahead.
Around 1970, there were studies of the nitrosamines,
mm-hmm.
compounds mostly involving a proline or other amino acids reacting with nitrates in the stomach. And it came out that they were very powerful carcinogens, and that they are formed in cigarette smoke.
Right.
They're one of the major carcinogens in cigarette smoke. But the farm industry was forcing a greater production by using artificial fertilizers, high nitrate fertilizers.
Okay.
And spinach produced with those fertilizers will grow very, very quickly, produce a lot of mass, but the forcing it with the high nitrate causes it to contain several times as much nitrate as normal vegetables would. And the cooking process alone forms the nitrosamines. So well-cooked spinach.
Even when you're boiling a vegetable in water, rather than the high heat, they typically associate nitrosamines with, like, bacon or...
Yeah, even vegetables, which have the reputation for being associated with a low cancer incidence because of the many good nutrients they contain, it happens if you choose the vegetables that are industrially over-fertilized with nitrate and then cook them thoroughly so that they're digestible, you're producing the same sort of carcinogen that tobacco smoke contains.
Now, presumably, I don't mean to butt in here, Dr. Pete, but presumably nitrate fertilizers, I mean, are they, I wonder if they're...
Well, yeah, but they could be chicken manure that... Yeah. No, I don't think nitrate fertilizers are allowed organically. But, I mean, maybe the chicken manure... I don't know, Michael looks like he has something to say here. Maybe they're over-fertilizing even with chicken manure. What, I mean, in organic farming.
The nitrogen could be in the form of ammonia. That would be the safe way for the plants to get their nitrogen.
Okay.
There wouldn't be any problem then, but the more they're forced with an excess of nitrogen, they simply absorb the nitrate or nitrite in a crude chemical form that isn't doing the plant any good. When you eat it, then it circulates in your body and is then exposed to many layers of enzymic and non-enzymic interactions, free radicals, as well as reductases will convert nitrate to nitrite, nitrite to nitric oxide.
Okay.
And those increase according to your level of stress. So when you're eating food that either contains it as preservatives, like in processed meats, or the industrially produced vegetables, you're creating the conditions for a bad reaction to stress.
And then if you're stressed out when you're eating, then that makes it even worse?
I would suppose so.
It makes all digestion worse, right?
With old age, the conversion of the ordinary protein, arginine, to nitric oxide is accelerated by the various things that interfere with your cellular oxidation. And then if you add environmental nitrates or nitrites to that, you're making your ability to resist stress weaker and weaker because these things accumulate and become a more abundant source of nitric oxide, which then... feeds back and blocks the ability to use oxygen.
So what about the naturally derived nitrates from nitrates from celery?
Probably just as bad.
Oh, I think they're just as bad.
Yeah, because it's the bottom line. They're still producing nitrates. So does the process of aging then can accelerate the process of nitric oxide or nitrate formation in the elderly?
The argument that the industry is pushing is that brain circulation supposedly goes with intelligence. It does in young people. And so if you increase the diameter of the blood vessels by increasing your nitric oxide, you're going to reverse the process of brain aging by getting more blood circulating. It does help the brain to function, to circulate more blood through it, but the problem is that nitric oxide at the same time is blocking the ability to use the oxygen. So it's imitating a shock state in which the blood or in cirrhosis, for example, you get an exaggerated circulation of blood, which isn't being used because things are inhibiting the oxidative enzymes. And in the spontaneously age-accelerated rats and mice, they're genetic mutants that age at about three or four times the normal rate. They're very old when they're 6 months old. These animals happen to produce tremendous amounts of nitric oxide. And so the people arguing for the sale of nitric oxide products say, well, that's because they're defective and they need more nitric oxide. So they say that the high concentration of nitric oxide in the prematurely senile animals is there protectively.
Goodness.
But when you intervene, for example, exposing to overdoses of ultraviolet light or ionizing radiation, mm-hmm. You create changes similar to those of aging, including gene mutations and so on. And you can extract the liquid from an organism that has been irradiated, and that liquid will produce the same deterioration, mutations, and so on.
The bystander effect.
Yeah, and the bystander effect is largely the result of overproduction of nitric oxide.
Wow. Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM, and from now until the end of the show, 8 o'clock, callers are either are welcomed and or encouraged to call in with any questions related to this month's subject of what the government don't tell us about what they tell us is good, and or the wider subject of nitric oxide and some of the chemicals we're talking about, fluoride here, and then nitrates and nitrites, which are common preservatives in meat. The number, if you live in the area, is 923-3911. If you're outside the area, there's an 800 number, which is 1-800-KMUD-RAD. That's 1-800-568-3723. And we definitely welcome all those people that call from all over the state, so I really appreciate those calls. I did actually get a, just by the by here, Dr. Pete, I got an email from a listener in Germany today who actually asked me a question. He wanted to know what your opinion on cannabis was. So I don't know, without getting too geopolitical, because I know this is a kind of a seat of cannabis and its use for alternative disease and cancers and other things. But he was saying that he was kind of frightened by the what he did recognize, both himself and in the wider perspective of cannabis's negative effects. He wanted to know what your understanding of cannabis was. And I know that you'll come from a purely physiological and fact-based perspective. So what are your views on cannabis?
When I was 10 years old, a doctor prescribed it for migraines. And I took a glass of the tea every day for about a month. A big bag full of cannabis leaves, and I didn't notice really any effect. So I was never impressed by the claims for its great sedative or pain-killing effects or whatever. But I know it does have those useful sedative effects.
What do you think of the potential estrogenic effect of it, given that it's in the same family as hops? Only two members exist in the cannabinaceae, cannabis sativa and then humulus lupulus, the hop. And I know in England in the summertime, when typically the women would be picking the hops in the hop fields for the beer industry, most of these women would skip their menstrual cycle because it was such a disruptor of the menstrual cycle because of its estrogenic activity. How about that? What do you know about that?
It does have an anti-testosterone effect. I think the worst effects are when it's smoked, because the smoke itself has an estrogen action.
Okay. Yeah. So from that perspective, I mean, I know that you talk a lot about estrogen as being a very negative pro-inflammatory hormone. I mean, that's correct enough, isn't it?
Yeah, in general.
In general.
It activates the immune system in a short-term, an antibody-producing way that is in certain situations useful, but it's why women have very high incidence of autoimmune disorders, because it impairs the energy resources at the same time that it's making these short-term emergency changes in the immune system.
Right. Okay, so let's move on. Oh, do we have a caller? Yeah, okay, we have a call. Let's take the first caller. Caller, where are you from?
Well, I'm from Midway, and I found a little information, or I couldn't find. I do believe that all the, you know, synthetic fertilizers are not organically listed, and I dove through a whole bunch of things, and nothing is saying that it is, although I haven't found something that says it isn't. And the highest nitrogen content I have found of the things they're advertising in this quick search has been about 12%, and
well,
I believe you can get a little bit higher.
Yeah.
That's higher than chicken manure, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a feather meal, and I would wonder about human-based or, you know, cow-based urines, too. I know in Sweden they're collecting urine, but I think chemically nitrogen is nitrogen. If you have too much, it's bad for the soil and bad for everything, no matter where it's from.
Right.
But I'm not the source on that, and okay. We do have a caller.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, caller, welcome to the show. Where are you from?
This is David from Missouri.
Oh, hey, David.
How are you all doing?
Doing good. What's your question?
Good. So I'm glad you're talking about the government, and I guess I want to comment on the fact that there always seems to be a lot of confusion out in the world. If you've listened to any of the debates about different political systems, you know, like communism, socialism, democracy, or even some of the terms capitalism. And it's just amazing that really our government is such a nebulous term. We don't even know what our government is. It appears that it's like a corporate structure that's being run by corporations. It's just being used as a shell to hide under.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always baffled by the fact that things like fluoride are being put into our water, and it's an industrial waste. Well, mm-hmm. They use these different methods to, conceal things they're doing.
Yeah,
but then at the same time, it appears that there's something a little bit more evil going on at the same time, which, of course, once we start going in that direction, then we're conspiracy theorists. But just in general, if you look at the government with everything to do with our food supply, with the military, the banking industry, I mean, mm-hmm. what they get away with.
Mm-hmm. And their biggest corporations,
belief. Corporations, that is. Supposedly, when we have this government to protect us, it's obvious that it's all just a big illusion, a scam.
Yeah.
And, I keep thinking about Dr. Pete really has awakened me to this idea of learned helplessness. In a way, that's what the program is all the time. It's trying to get as much of the population to learn helplessness.
Yeah, to not fight.
If you
back.
Are aware of all these different things going on, and you talk to, there's so many people that are just so asleep
mm-hmm.
and have no idea these things are going on. And when you talk about them, they think you're crazy.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm glad you're talking about it. It seems like there should be a lot more attention devoted to it, because all these different things that we're always struggling with why this is being done, why is this going on? Well, it appears to be a part of a larger agenda that I'm not sure exactly what the end game is there, but it's not good.
Dare we mention eugenics, or, you could get a lot deeper into this whole political
conversation. I've heard you say, Andrew, I don't want to get political here, and I understand why you don't want to do that, because people condemn you if you start going down these paths. But I'm telling you, we need to start start going down these paths, people need to start waking up to what's going on.
Yeah, well, that's...
And it's been going on a long time, but now it seems like it's really accelerated, and
yeah,
things are...
Well, I think the internet is largely responsible for making this kind of information possible, and radio stations like KMUD that are not controlled to a large extent, and free speech is still allowed, and that's why we have Dr. Pete on the show, because he's very grounded in science.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate this show so much. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you know, again, the idea of the corporations and how they have taken everything over and have such incredible power. And, you know, if you think about the banking industry itself, these corporations are just...
Mm-hmm. Evil.
I mean, they are so in control and people have no idea.
So evil.
But
yeah.
Just like corporate media. I mean, it is a brainwashing program, mm-hmm. an extreme brainwashing program.
Yeah, and it doesn't want you arguing or fighting back. It wants you just... sitting there, taking it,
learned
lying down. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Pete,
it wants to have us all just helpless, you know, to realize that we can't do anything, and they're doing a good job.
Well, we can do something. That's the whole point. We do have.
I believe it too.
We do have constitutional rights here. So, folks, exercise your rights, or they are going to be lost. So,
yeah, and just, you know, I think we all just need to speak up more to people and talk more to people about, you know, check this out. You know, This is not true. We need to get to the truth.
Yep, it's a great nation we live in, folks. God bless America. It's an awesome country, and the rest of the world looks to it to lead the way. And if we don't wake up here soon, it's not going to be around much longer. So anyway, hopefully people listening to this show recognize the truth that's being told, and they can go check it out for themselves. I think we've talked about so many subjects that are controversial, and there is science behind it to show that the truth is there. So that's pretty much our thrust. Let's get into the rest of tonight's show here. So
I did just want to ask Dr. Pete, since you've been around a little bit longer than we have, what do you see? Can I ask you for your comments on this state of our country?
Oh, well, I talked to old people when I was young to try to find out what it was like 50 years before my time.
Mm-hmm.
And my impression is really that it has been declining rapidly for about 150 years now. In the 60 years that I've been studying and talking to people about politics and such, the problems that I saw in the late 1940s and 50s, I was one of the few people talking about it at that time, but now it is probably there are millions of people using the internet to see the same drift of events, which basically is corporate control and using education and the media to make the people think that
against you
things are progressing.
Mm-hmm.
The story that lifespan has been lengthened, the cancer war is being won.
Yeah, right.
They're simply creating fraudulent statistics.
Yep.
The Romans, the adult lifespan in ancient Rome was about the same as 20th century America.
Yeah, and we supposedly have all this technology to help us now, and the science to do miraculous things, and yet we really haven't advanced much at all. The whole war on cancer is a complete joke.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Dr. Pete.
Okay, so I just wanted to open up a another subject here of another food, and hopefully people will wake up to the truth about what's going on here. An Austrian study finding that eating GE corn may reduce fertility. So a study sponsored by the Austrian Ministries for Agriculture and Health found that mice fed a genetically engineered corn developed by the Monsanto company produced fewer offspring than those fed conventional corn. The study was led by Dr. Jürgen Zentek, professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Vienna. For 20 weeks, Dr. Zentek and his team fed mice diets consisting of either 33% genetically engineered corn or 33% of a closely related non-genetically engineered variety. The diets were otherwise nutritionally equivalent. Mice fed the GE corn diet had fewer litters, fewer total offspring, smaller offspring, and more females with no offspring than mice fed the conventional corn. The effects were particularly pronounced in the third and fourth litters after the mice had consumed the GE corn for a longer period of time. The authors attributed the reduced fertility to the GE corn feed and said it might be related to unintended effects of the genetic modification process. This meticulous study suggests that a popular type of genetically engineered corn may harbor fertility-reducing substances, said Bill Freese, science policy analyst at the Center for Food Safety and co-author of a peer-reviewed study on GE crop regulation. It's no surprise to us that U.S. regulators did not catch this. None of our regulatory agencies require any long-term animal feeding trials before allowing genetically engineered crops on the market. So, folks, this is another example of big agriculture and big corporate interests lobbying the government, allowing these kind of things to come to pass, when I think the self-evident truth is that that is not right, and that there's something potentially very dangerous about this, and we need a lot longer to see the effects. So if the litters of mice, second, third, and fourth generation, showed increasing declining fertility, then just like the obesity epidemic in America in the last 50 years has caught up to 90% of the population, the same thing is probably going to happen with GE foods, as the the offspring multiply the defects from generation to generation. Another comment here was that male corn farm workers who regularly work with atrazine are found to have lower sperm counts. Another great chemical to treat your GM corn with. And this is a product made by Zentech. So atrazine is another broad-spectrum herbicide that is used in these cornfields, and, again, been very closely linked to lower sperm counts.
And it's estrogenic.
And it's estrogenic. There you go. So another reason for estrogen to be taken cautiously.
And if your corn's not organic, you can bet it's GMO.
Okay. So I think just to continue... I'd heard a mention earlier on. Let's just let people know again. You're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with questions related or unrelated to this month's subject of food and the additives and nitric oxide. The number, if you live in the area, is 923-3911. The area code for this area is 707. 923-3911, or if you want an 800 number, toll free, that's 1-800-568-3723. So, Dr. Pete, I know that you'd talked about potassium nitrate being a, I believe it was another sperm reducer, sperm count reducer.
Yeah, there was an experiment giving it to full-grown bulls, and then they analyzed their testicles and found that immediately, with a moderate dose, their testosterone production went down, and then the sperm count went down, and it stayed low. The testicles were permanently damaged after they stopped giving them the doses of it.
Whoops. Do you know if this product, then potassium nitrate, do you know if this is directly added to any foods, or if this is a?
Well, the nitrite is actually worse, more toxic.
It's worse
because it's chemically closer to nitric oxide.
Oh my goodness! And it's all about the generation of nitric oxide from these nitrites, isn't it? The nitrates and nitrites that form the nitrous amines and nitric oxide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was a kid,
we have a caller. We have a caller, Dr. Pete.
Okay.
Let's take this caller first.
Save that thought about when you were a kid. I want to hear that.
Save the thought. You got to remember that, sir. Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from?
Hi, I'm from Pepperwood.
Okay, hi. What's your question?
Well, actually, I really appreciate you guys having Dr. Pete on. I've always wondered, are multiple vitamins good? Should we be taking them as we age? And even though we try and eat healthy. And number two, especially for women, our extra sources of calcium, like a calcium supplement, or should we just be eating rich, you know, calcium foods? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you for your call. Okay, Dr. P, give us your views on multivitamins and calcium.
There are situations where the multivitamins could be useful if you're really in a bad situation for getting good food. But the trouble is that they aren't generally well formulated, and even the best formulations are made with somewhat contaminated chemicals. About 40 years ago, I found that I was having migraine headaches every time I took certain vitamins, especially vitamin B2, ascorbic acid, and rutin were the most intense for me. And I found that essentially all of the people that I talked to with serious allergy problems were taking vitamin supplements, and that when they stopped the supplements, they recovered from their chronic allergy symptoms. So I'm convinced that unless it's a very special situation, that it's better to avoid the supplements and to choose foods for their high nutrient content.
Do you, in all reality, do you think, or do you know what particular vitamins might be more implicated in deficiency than others in terms of what people might want to gravitate, what food they might want to gravitate towards to get these or use a supplement?
I always recommend eggs and liver as the easiest way to get both trace minerals and vitamins. But you can look at food charts and find things that are not necessarily as good, but you can put together a diet with a high content of certain vitamins. Vitamin B2 is one that I've seen lots of serious deficiencies. People with a red nose, a rosacea, nosebleeds, some mood problems, poor memory and such. You can't use oxygen if you're deficient in vitamin B2.
Right.
But besides the fact that the synthetics are so allergenic for lots of people, if you take a very large amount, and some of the pills have 50 or 100 milligrams in each tablet, it can reach the level in your skin and your eyes where it sensitizes you to the sunlight. Even blue light will react with riboflavin in your eyes and skin, causing free radical chains.
Wow. What kind of dosage would you recommend for vitamin B2?
5 or 10
5
milligrams.
Or 10, there you go. It's vitamin B2, folks, also is a water-soluble vitamin, so not something that you can store, probably more easily become deficient in. And very quickly, because we do have another caller, that last caller mentioned calcium. I know you're a big proponent of milk, cheese, dairy products in general. Any other sources for a good supply of calcium?
Green leaves,
right.
If they're well-cooked, are a great source of calcium and magnesium.
And grown organically, so they don't have a great source of nitric oxide.
Okay, so let's get this next caller. Caller, you're on the air, and where are you from?
Eureka.
Hey, are you welcome to the show, and what's your question?
I was wondering about products that specifically say they'll boost nitric oxide, things like Super Beets, for example.
Super Beets.
Like red beets?
Well, that's a commercial product that claims to have, you know, a highly concentrated effect on your nitric oxide based on extracts from beets.
Yeah, well, it's something that you don't want, though. So presumably you think that you need it?
No, I don't think. I was kind of wondering, based on what you said, that it seemed like it would be a bad thing directly. It seems
absolutely
kind of odd. to be proclaiming it so directly as a good thing.
Well, that's the unfortunate part of the information that most people will receive. There's a pretty big campaign here to promote nitric oxide as healthy. I know the whole Viagra industry, which is pretty much based on nitric oxide as a means to get that vasodilation and engorgement that the pill is so famous for, is actually very can promote heart attack, cardiovascular accidents.
And atrophy of the testicles.
And atrophy of the testicles, there you go. So that's not what you want, folks. Nitric oxide and Viagra, actually very bad news. And the people that produce the compound are not going to tell you that. It's just going to feel good, and it's going to come with a lot of cost.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so if any other callers are listening and you'd like to ask questions about this topic or any other topics, toll-free number is 1-800-568-3723. And we're very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Peet, PhD, who's been studying for the last 45, 50 years almost here. And it's his specialty. So
Dr. Peet, are red beets high in arginine? Or something?
I think they are. But maybe they're feeding them extra nitrate so they can claim that they're super beets.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, I think we do have another call coming in, but let's just see if this call's going to materialize into a caller or if it's just someone asking a question offline. I know the lights are going here, so do we have a caller on the air?
Yes, the first caller just wants to say migraines can be taken care of with two hits of hash. And we have another caller in a second.
Okay.
Well, that was what Dr. Peet was saying he had been prescribed a bag of cannabis leaves for.
Which didn't work.
Well, maybe that's because it wasn't hash.
Okay, so caller, you're on the air, and where are you from?
I'm from Birmingham.
Say that again, I didn't hear that.
First Humboldt.
Did you say Humboldt?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think you got some feedback, perhaps, on the line. Okay.
So, I'm for you to ask a question. Anyway, I just wanted to know if something is non-GMO project verified. Do they still can they still use glyphosate and atrazine and other crap on there, or is it also kind of similar to organic where they can't have additives?
No. If it's non-GMO, doesn't mean to say the farmer doesn't use agricultural agrochemicals on it. It just the fact that if it is GE or GMO, you can be sure they're putting agrochemicals on it. If it's not organic,
not a guarantee of it being like chemical free.
If it's not organic, you can almost surely guarantee that the possibility is high that agrochemicals are being used. The only hopefully sure way you can be sure is to use a certified organic product, buy certified organic vegetables and meat. And according to the USDA, you are not allowed to use any of these chemicals that we're talking about on certified organic products. So
I know they're strict with us about what we use and can only use chicken manure, but I don't know if that's just our certifying body. Maybe other certifying bodies
are
more
lenient. No, I think it's USDA. It's the United States Department of Agriculture. So, yeah, the only way you can be really sure of getting good, safe food at this point in time before it probably falls to some kind of control will be certified organic.
Okay, so non-GMO project verified is just kind of like a stepping stone on the way to really good food.
Yeah, it's on the way because it's non-GMO, but what you've really got to make sure is that they're not using any agrochemicals on the product to grow it, and that they're actually producing a good quality, holistically oriented, foodstuff.
Yeah, glyphosate is a little spooky.
You definitely don't want to be putting glyphosate.
Thanks a lot. I'm glad for that answer. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Well, it's 6 minutes to 8. So if any callers would still like to call, very welcome. 923-3911 in the area or 800 number 800-KMUD RAD, which is 1-800-568-3723.
So, okay. Dr. Peet, you were going to tell us something about when you were a kid.
There was the veterans believed that they had been fed potassium nitrate in their food, and I read old 17th, 18th century things that described it as a treatment for prisoners and soldiers to decrease their libido so that they could attend a war or not be interested in romance.
Yeah.
That was, for hundreds of years, that was a popular concept. People seemed to recognize that it actually lowered libido. And the recent experiments with bulls and such show that it does stop the production of testosterone.
But which is not what you
if
want.
You look on the internet, the all of the popular medical sites are saying that's a big myth. The army would never think of doing that, and prison officials would never think of poisoning their prisoners or soldiers.
Sure, they would.
But if they forget that for hundreds of years people were recognizing the effect, and for it to be such a historically known fact that it suppresses libido, it's strange that everyone is so enthusiastic about denying that it has ever happened.
Yeah, sounds a little bit like the Nazi concentration camp experiments that were done, basically using people as human guinea pigs to conduct the research that supposedly has led us to great advancements in science into this day and age.
Barbara Seaman, who was a great researcher on estrogen, in one of her books, gave the story of the German experiments in the concentration camps using estrogen to control, make the prisoners passive. And she was comparing the American medical practice of prescribing estrogen to practically all the women in the country.
Yep. Well, it's let me see here. It's almost coming up for 2 minutes to the top of the hour. So let me take this opportunity to thank you so much for giving your time like you do. I know you're very busy and very involved with what you do, so I appreciate that time.
I do want to ask Dr. Pete one more question. So, Dr. Pete, potassium nitrate, is that found in specific foods or is it just part of the meat-preserving food additive?
It's just for an additive.
Mainly in meats, or is it in other foods?
The nitrates, I think, are used in some other foods, but I think it's mainly for making meat red.
Okay.
For keeping it red, right.
It functions as a substitute for oxygen in the
hemoglobin, huh?
Hemoglobin.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if it could be making the meat red that's just in the counter, like packaged up. Do they have to list it as a food additive?
Yeah, why does meat look so red on the meat counter in the supermarket? Anyway, I know. Listen, it's 2 minutes to Let's give people the information to get to you. That's more important than
Thank you, Dr. Pete.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much for your time. Okay, so people have enjoyed, if they've enjoyed listening to Dr. Pete and they want to know more about him, www.raypete.com. He doesn't sell anything. I know he gives a lot of his time to a lot of people for nothing, and he's very altruistic. He produces research because he's passionate about it, folks. It's not his business. He's passionate about it. So if you'd like to go visit his website, find out more of what he has to offer, very alternative, very eye-opening. The truth's out there, folks. You've just got to look, take a look, get your head out of the sand, take a look at it. Thanks so much for joining us. People like to contact us anytime, Monday through Friday, business hours, 1-888-WBM-HERB. Happy Christmas, Happy New Year. Until January 2016, my name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson-Murray. Good night.
Good night.